The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Here comes Goodrow with his magic save, rebound, score! Monahan! Set to Bowers, closing in, save, rebound, Kansas in the blue paint, and score! Now Goodrow, block, he scores! 3-0 Tampa Bay!
Neutralize Kreider. Direct pass it. Derek Stepan.
Hustle.
One was gone. He scores! Chris Kreider has tied it. Across it goes. He can lay a shot. He scores!
Off the tie-up. It is fair, but it came back to Yandle. Drive by Girardi. And a save.
Listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And download every episode and more at basicallyasportsshow.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike.
And you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
It wasn't a Mateau moment, but it was pretty good.
I'm doing the same thing I did last season when I jumped on the Rangers bandwagon. Kitchener Rangers, New York Rangers, it's all the same logo.
More or less. But I tell you what, though, I was watching that last night. From about 17 minutes to about 15 minutes left, I don't know how the Rangers survived that onslaught by the Capitals. Jesus. It looked like they had 12 guys on the ice.
Dude, in that overtime, they kept the puck down there for like 5 full minutes.
I know. That's what I'm talking about. I just thought, no way they're going to survive this. No way.
It's the Capitals, you know. I'm sorry. They're Sharks East.
And then, you know, when Stepan put the rebound in, I mean, Holtby was flat on his ass and just in like the most helpless position he could be in. I felt kind of bad for him, actually.
Well, because he was screened. He was trying to lunge to his left. The shot got blocked. And at that point, he's stuck. It's no fault to him. He played great all game.
I mean, you really can't blame him. It was just one of those things.
I do have to say that in the week since our last show, the second round really picked up. We thought Tampa was going to have it easy with Montreal. Montreal made a series of it. We thought that the Capitals would make quick work of the Rangers, and the Rangers completed the comeback. So,
yeah.
The second round got, at least out east, out west, Calgary went down in five, and we got the sweep.
For the calculated dominance of the Western Conference.
It's not even Western dominance. It's just like some teams in the West just being significantly better than other teams.
Yes.
I was surprised Minnesota rolled over as easily as they did.
I think a case could be made that they really only got past the first round because St. Louis, you know, is St. Louis.
Yeah. Great minds. I just thought they'd at least win a game or two, you know, make it competitive.
I mean, you saw the way the first game played out where, you know, the three goals against them, then they score three goals. You think, well, this is going to be a crazy series.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Chicago's just was better.
How worried are you about the Blackhawks, Zach, with your Ducks?
Oh, I mean, as worried as I could be about anybody else, I guess.
Well, I don't know, man. This Blackhawks team,
It was a combination of two things against Minnesota. Chicago being good, and I think the carriage turning back into a pumpkin for Minnesota. They couldn't score. And it wasn't necessarily because the Chicago defense is good, and Corey Crawford a very good series, but I don't think the offensive ineptitude of Minnesota wasn't just because of what Chicago was doing. They just started missing the net.
Yeah.
You know?
The thing that worries me about Anaheim was that in the last two games of that Calgary series, they kind of reminded me of the Flames. I mean, of the Ducks from the Jets series. That is, they let the Flames get the lead in both of those games, and they had to sort of rally at the end to come back. You can do that for three games against the Winnipeg Jets. You can do that for two games against the Calgary Flames. I don't know if you can get away with that even once against the Blackhawks.
I think this is going to be a hell of a series. I really do.
It's going to be a war.
It really is.
It's not going to be like any of the first round series for either of the two teams up to this point.
And I think, honestly, looking at the West, I think it's the best series we could have asked for coming out of it, probably. You know, the best final for the West, don't you think?
It's always kind of been this case where I think if you look at the last few seasons, at least as far back as the last lockout, The two best teams in the West have always been the Ducks and the Blackhawks, and we've never really gotten them in a conference final before.
They've been dancing around each other, and one team couldn't hold up the end of the bargain. Usually the Ducks, but...
Boudreaux, you know, finally gets to his conference final. We'll see how that goes for him. I mean, did you see
his face after the Corey Perry goal?
No, actually, I wasn't able to catch the entirety of that last game.
Just wide grin, purple face, just pointing over at Corey Perry like, yeah, you did it. You did it. We're going to the thing.
Well, he's an X factor in this now, you know?
Well, see, you don't know how he's going to respond.
Right. Because, like I said last week, the Blackhawks are not going to be as easy as the Jets or the Flames were. But then again, he's here. That monkey's off his back, so maybe he doesn't flip out. Who knows? I'm really looking forward to this series. I don't know. I guess the Rangers-Tampa is going to be pretty good, too.
I'm happy that the Rangers came back simply because, you know, in storyline terms, I think Rangers-Lightning is a better story than Caps-Lightning because you got the St. Louis factor.
Right. Not to mention, the nice thing about it for the Rangers this year is that no one had to die to get to this point, which is always a good thing.
Although, it is interesting to note that didn't they have to come back from 3-1 last year in the second round against Pittsburgh?
Was it 3-1? Yes. Okay, but
yes.
I don't remember that series. That wasn't like every game was one goal. Then I thought about it. I thought maybe it was. I don't remember.
Henrik Lundqvist, 7-0 in Game 7. Ties Patrick Waugh and Martin Brodeur for Game 7 victories. Kenny Albert, the Rangers play-by-play guy and NBC Sports TV guy sometimes. He put it out on Twitter that May 13th, 2015, Henrik Lundqvist, 35 saves in a Game 7 victory. May 13th, 2014, 35 saves in a Game 7 victory. May 13th, 2013, 35 saves in a Game 7 victory.
The Rangers know that they've just got to give up 35 shots in a Game 7. They'll be fine.
So on May 13th.
On May 13th, right. That's wild.
Yeah, but Lundqvist is just so clutch. Like, with the Capitals, it was like they had their shots. And, I mean, Ovechkin even scored a goal in Game 7, so it's not on him.
I'm still going to put it on him because it's funny.
He still has the Bruce Boudreaux thing of he's never been out of the second round.
I was listening to Dan Patrick today, and he said that there was a headline somewhere that said that Alex Ovechkin is the most underachieving player in the NHL in NHL history or something like that.
Look at him in every big game he's played. And I'm not even just talking about the NHL. Look at him in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Anytime things start getting serious for Russia in the Olympics, he disappears.
That also has something to do with the rest of the team. Like, yes, Ovechkin's a star, and it's always in the captain, and yeah, it's going to come back to him. But, I mean, he scored a goal yesterday. Where was everybody else?
Yeah, and Holtby played pretty well, right?
Holtby played well. Like, they finally get competent goaltending. Hell, they were up 3-1 in the series.
Yeah.
And they had it. They were right there, and they just couldn't close it out.
As a fan, when you're up 3-1 like that, at what point do you realize it's gotten away from you?
In my mind, it's got to be once it hits Game 7. Because if you're a fan, even if you give it up and it goes to 3-2, you still think, okay, we're in the driver's seat. But once it goes into Game 7 and then it dawns on you that, you know, there are no more second chances. If you don't get it done, then you've given up the lead.
That's what I mean. Like with San Jose last year, when did it dawn on their fans that, like, hey, you know what? We're going to lose this thing.
Game 4.
Yeah. I called a Kings comeback last year once it was 3-1. Once the Kings won that one game, I just got a sense that we were going to see the mightiest sharking that had ever occurred.
Whichever one of those games last year that went into overtime in the Kings won.
That was that was Game 4.
Was it Game 4?
It was Game 4, yes.
I thought it was 5 or 6. But okay, if it was Game 4, then it was definitely that. Because then, like, once that happened, you see the seed of doubt creeps in.
That's what I'm asking about, yeah.
But that's also a different situation where it's you have the perennial underachievers in the Sharks and the perennial now buzzsaw that the Kings became. So it's like you get the Sharks like, oh, no, we can't do this. And the Kings saying, oh, yeah, we can do this. And then it kind of two forces working against each other. But it's similar to the Capitals a little bit because just of their history. The Caps in Game 7s – They are the Sharks East. They're exactly that. Like you get them into a Game 7 and they don't have as much confidence. They barely got out of the Islanders Game 7 in the first round.
I mean, if you just look at it in terms of the Sharks and the Capitals, I mean, these are both teams who for at least the past 5 years, just the level of talent that they've had, they should at least have one cup each. Say what you will about the Penguins pissing, you know, their window away. At least they managed to get Sidney Crosby a cup. I mean, Alex Ovechkin, whether or not it's fair, you know, if he doesn't win a cup, whether or not it's fair, it's going to be put on him. But I do think that a lot of that goes on the organization itself. At a certain point, you can cycle through all the role players you want. You can cycle through all the coaches you can get. At a certain point, it's just, hey, maybe management is the problem. And I think that happened. I think that became very evident in San Jose, you know, this past offseason and then this season, that management, you know, once things flew off the rails, they had no idea how to correct it. Really, well, exposed how inept that was.
But the Capitals changed their management. The Capitals got a new GM. They got a new coach.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. I think they've had relatively the same core, though.
It has been.
I mean, that's going to obviously being at the center, but they are similar, but at least the Capitals tried to change something. And I think Barry Trotz has them in a better direction,
mm-hmm.
but they still lack that something, you know?
Well, I just want to know what Alex Ovechkin's got to think about all this, because Bruce Boudreau, who he, you know, he more or less chased out of Washington.
Right. It's not Boudreau's fault anymore.
Yeah, Boudreau's now proven that he can get to the third round. So, right. You know, Ovi.
Ovi.
Yeah. It was – I mean, credit to the Rangers, too, for getting up off the mats like that and coming back. That's pretty impressive. I think that once, you know, that stretch – in overtime last night, when the Caps couldn't score at that point,
yeah.
I'm just thinking at that, you're just going, well, what the hell do we do now?
And it always seems to be this way in overtime. One team comes out firing on all cylinders, and there's always like a 5 minute blitz. And if the team on the receiving end can weather the storm and get through that without giving up a goal, then it seems like it's their game to lose.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching that. I even posted on the boards what was happening. I'm like, I don't know how they're surviving this. Because every time they tried to clear the zone, the Rangers, I mean, there was a capital there somewhere to knock it. I mean, it was just incredible.
As a fan, whenever you see that and your team's just getting shot for shot for shot, you know the way the game works in hockey. You will get 20 shots, consecutive shots, and if you don't score, the very next shot is going to go in.
I don't know. I think if I'm a Caps fan, I'm watching that barrage and I'm going, man, it's just seconds away. We're going to punch it home and that's going to be it. We're going to win this thing after almost blowing it. And then
Especially with their history, it's a creeping doubt. You're like, we're gonna lose this thing.
That's what I meant when I asked the question. When do you realize, not that you're going to lose, but that it's gotten away from you?
In the middle of Game 6.
In this series, I'd say probably probably after Game 6 when it went to Game 7. But if we're talking a team that's up 3-0 rather than 3-1, I think you start worrying after it's 3-2. If you have a team on the ropes and you're up 3 games to nothing, sure, maybe they win one more game as sort of a last show of defiance. But if you don't close it out in 5 and they push it to 6, then you probably start worrying.
Right.
I know
to the Tampa-Montreal series.
Well, I know Kramerica was saying that he felt
– Bolts talk.
You know, he thought that Tampa was done after it became 3-2 Montreal. Once Montreal pushed it to 3-2.
Yep.
Given how dominant Montreal was in game – I mean, how dominant Tampa was in Game 6, I'm not sure if that was founded necessarily in reality. But it does seem to be, you know, if you have a team up 3-0 and then you give up 2 straight games, well, you know, one game, maybe that's a fluke, but 2 games, that's momentum.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking back to the 2004 American League Championship Series, the year the Red Sox finally broke through. They were down 3-0 to the Yankees. When they won that 5th game, there was no doubt in my mind they were going to win the series. They were going to pull it all the way off, yeah. Because you could just – it's funny because especially in a sport like baseball, it's kind of hard to figure out any kind of momentum, but you could literally see it in that series. You're like, man, this thing has totally switched over to the Red Sox favor. And I think we saw it last year. With the Kings and the Sharks, the same thing happened. It was like you just knew.
It's odd because game 3 and 4 in that series last year, they were both overtime games. The Sharks dominated the Kings in the first 2 games. And then game 3 comes around and it goes to overtime. And I got the sense in game 3, like, oh, the Kings are finally starting to turn the corner. And then the Sharks got lucky off of a goal, off of a – I think it was a Marlowe goal that was just like a fluke goal. Yep. And then so that made it 3-0. And then even then I was thinking, the Kings showed me something last night. If they can win game four, they still have a shot. And lo and behold, they did. And then they went on to just wipe the floor of the Sharks for the next three.
Yeah,
so.
Didn't the Sharks win the first game like 7-2 or something like that in that series last year? Yeah.
And then the Kings actually ended up winning the overall score because they just – they just monkey stomped the Sharks in those final three games.
I thought Montreal was going to pull off the comeback too. I was a little surprised when Tampa put them away in six like that because I thought, wow, this thing's kind of shifted. And
it shows you a little bit of what Tampa's made of too.
Yeah,
they had a little fortitude in them to not just get rolled over.
Right.
So
what do we like? Who we like going into these the finals here? I will say this: the New York Rangers have the best goalie left of all four teams. There's something that to think about.
Yes, yes.
Probably the best defense.
The Rangers?
Yeah, I think.
If you get Danny Boyle as Metamucil, he might, you know, the defense might pick up.
He took a hit to the head yesterday, too.
Yeah.
Man, Metamucil's not going to do much good for that. Well, anyway, who do we like? Do we like Tampa? We like, well, Zach, I know you like the Lightning.
Well, I picked in my bracket thing at the beginning of this, I picked the Lightning to make the final. So I think I got to stick with them. Ben Bishop has looked better, but he can still be streaky. I know. I like Tampa's defense. They play really fast. They have a lot of scoring depth, and people have said this a couple times now, but Stamkos finally scored after a little drought. And if Stamkos can finally get going, then for sure I'd take Tampa, in the series. If Stamkos is still struggling, I don't know. I think both these conference finals are going to go at least six, both of them. I'll take Tampa in six.
I'm going to pick New York in seven. I just think that overall they're the more talented team. The Lightning, I mean, okay, Tyler Johnson's had a tremendous postseason so far, and Steven Stamkos finally ended his drought. But I think player for player, the Rangers are probably better. And for added drama, St. Louis scores a hat trick in at least one game in Tampa.
Ugh. That's the other reason I want to pick Tampa, because I don't like what St. Louis did last year.
So I think
you got Callahan on the other side of that too. Don't forget.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You do.
Which is who's coming back from an appendectomy?
He's a hockey player. That's no big deal.
I think the big thing that's going to push New York over the top is goaltending.
Of course, if they do go to Game 7, it's an automatic.
Yeah, if they go to seven, you know.
As long as it's 35 shots given up.
Yeah.
Can't keep that in mind.
Tampa will get the 34 shots, be like, shit. Just
forget it. Yeah.
We gotta get two here really fast. We cannot go one and done. We gotta get two shots.
I don't care if you have to pick the puck up and throw it at him. We need two more shots.
What about you, Greg?
You know what? I would love to pick the Rangers. I really would. But I think Tampa, the Rangers, you know. In this entire series, they scored over two goals twice in seven games. Mm-hmm. And that worries me. They struggled to score against the Penguins. They've struggled to score against the Caps.
Every single game in that series was one-goal game, right?
Yeah.
In the Capitals series?
Yeah. I want to say they were one-goal games in the Pittsburgh series, too.
They were, yes.
Yeah,
The loss was by two goals, wasn't it?
I thought they were all by one. I'm not sure. But anyway, in any case, you're looking at a whole lot of games. They're one-goal games. I don't know how long you can keep that up. And they're just having trouble scoring. I think they've got the advantage in goaltending. I think they're the better defense, but the offensive woes concern me a little bit. I'm going to take the Lightning in seven. No, I'm going to take it six, because if they get it back to the Garden for seven, right. No way. Yeah, so it's got to be six. I prefer the Rangers, but I'm taking the Lightning. I'm happy with either team going on, actually. I'm fine with either one.
In the West, of course, we have my mighty Anaheim Ducks hosting the Chicago Blackhawks.
Well, we have basically a 3-4 shot of keeping the cup on the Bass compound this year. Kinda. I don't know if I completely renounced my Ranger fandom last week or not, but if we still count it, then there's the 3-4 shot here. which one of us you want to go first on this? Because I don't think you're going to like what either one of us have to say about this series, but
I kind of expect. I already know Mike's thoughts. I read them, but Mike, why don't you voice them for the people?
Yeah, Mike, go ahead and repeat yourself.
Where did I post this?
I thought you said something about it already.
No,
not like a pick, but just like
I don't recall. Possibly. I mean,
then I'm confusing
you know.
With someone else.
I mean, you're down enough wine coolers, and you know, you just kind of forget what you put online. But I'm gonna say, it's Blackhawks. It's one of those cases where I just don't feel I can pick against the Blackhawks. And I think between Anderson and Crawford, Crawford's had his struggles this season, but I'd still give the edge to him over Anderson. So. I'm going to say Blackhawks in six.
I'm with that. And for the same reasons Mike is, I'd like to see the Ducks win this series. I really would. But it's hard for me to pick against the Blackhawks. It's basically, I'll believe they're dead when they're dead. And until then, I'm going to stick with them. I would love to see. It's like kind of like the same thing with the Rangers-Lightning series. I want the Rangers to win. I think the Lightning are going to win. In this case, I'd like to see the Ducks win, but I think the Blackhawks are going to win.
Ducks in 13. obviously, I'm biased. I really believe in this team. Like, when they set their mind to doing it, like, just when they need to go win a game, they can go win the game. It's – yeah, they played with fire a little bit, but when they needed the third period comeback, they'd get the third period comeback. When they needed to win by one goal or hold off a one goal lead, they did it. They could have given in to the surge of Calgary and said, oh, this is a scrappy, plucky team, but we'll finish them off later. They didn't do that. They finished off the Jets when they needed to. They finished off Calgary when they needed to. You could say that they weren't tested. They were all tight series. I would say they were
tested pretty good against Winnipeg, actually. Not like dangerously so, but I think that Winnipeg showed up to play.
And then when it comes to the forwards, like let me break it down by position, right? So when it comes to the forwards, yes, you have Taves and yes, you have Kane. The Ducks have Getzlaf and Perry. The Hawks have Patrick Sharp and Brandon Saad and all that. Matt Beleski scored a goal in every single one of the Calgary games in the series, all five games. Ryan Kessler is playing great. Jakob Silfverberg is getting hot. The third and fourth lines have been doing their job. And then in net, Anderson has been solid. Like, he hasn't had to – I don't think he's had to win a game for the Ducks yet. But he's been – solid, just very, very, very good. And even the one game the Ducks lost to Calgary, the game tying goal was on a perfect shot. He did everything he could to stop it. It just no one was going to stop that Gaudreau shot.
That was that was an impressive 5-3 overtime win for the Calgary Flames.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But
it's another one of those unusual rules that you don't see every day, where you've got to win by two in overtime, but it happens.
Like. As biased as I am, I'm trying to like step back and look at it as from like a pure hockey fan perspective, and I think these teams are a lot closer than you guys are giving them credit for.
Oh, I think they are too.
I think one way or the other, it's a 6 or 7 game series, and I'm not going to back down from my team. Ducks.
If I had to go like top to bottom talent, just based on that alone, I'd probably pick the Ducks. Overall,
it's going to be a damn good series, man.
Yeah, I know, but here's my concern with the Ducks. Okay, is that the Blackhawks? It's like if you get up 3-0 on the Blackhawks, big deal. They don't give a shit. We're going to score 5 goals and send you home crying.
But you know
But here's the thing. Let me finish.
Okay.
What happens with Boudreaux? Like, say in game 2, when if you guys get up to like a 4-0 lead. And they come storming back and win 5-4. That's my concern.
That's where I get
worried about that, because then it's like, oh my God, you know, what I mean? Because we saw he almost went off the edge in the Calgary series. He didn't, but he was thinking about it. He was giving it serious consideration.
He made one change to the fourth line, and it turns out that change was not the greatest thing. Thomas Fleischmann played like garbage when he played.
Has Wiz made the ice for you guys yet in the playoffs or not?
No. Okay. But see, that's the thing. You look at the defensive depth. There isn't really any holes. But if somebody falters, you slide in James Wisniewski. Like they can work with that. That is when it comes to being up 3-0 and slowing down or whatever. The only thing I can really point to for the Ducks in that regard is game 1 against Calgary when they were up 3-0 and they just kept going. Like being able to, like, seeing this team every game so far, they have a different attitude than the way they played in the regular season. The one thing that does concern me is what you bring up with Boudreaux. Any Ducks fan that thinks that the first two rounds are going to continue into this round is fooling themselves. The Ducks are going to lose games in this round. They're probably going to lose at least two games in this round.
Yeah.
You have to be prepared for that. And Bruce Boudreaux has to not overreact, because one of the strengths of the Ducks so far, and one of his strengths, is that he hasn't really messed with the lineup. He's stayed the course and it's worked. And hopefully he sees that he's put together the best lineup he can right now. I think he gets it now. I think he understands the less that you do is better. And for all the line juggling that Bruce Boudreaux does, Joel Quenneville for the Blackhawks has had the same criticism levied against him
except he's got two Stanley Cups, so I think
I was just going to say the same thing, yeah.
Right, I know.
Well,
when the Blackhawks start to go down a little bit, Joel Quenneville juggles the lines just as much as anybody else. So it's going to be a fascinating series. It's going to be an entertaining series. It's going to be probably the best series of the playoffs.
I honestly think that whoever comes out of this one probably wins the cup. This is the way I look at it. But
yeah, Tampa gave the Ducks and Chicago trouble this year. So I wouldn't
and the Rangers too. I think they was it. The Rangers were what against them this year? It wasn't good. Yeah. But
and when speaking of regular season series, the other interesting thing: Ducks and Blackhawks played three games this year. The road team won every game.
The only thing I will say about me potentially underestimating the Ducks is that I watched every game that they played against Winnipeg, and I watched almost every game against Calgary. And I got to say, if the Ducks show up playing like they did in those first three games against Winnipeg, like if you take the Jets out and put the Blackhawks into that series, Blackhawks win it in 4 or 5. And that's kind of my thing, is that the Ducks have gone 8-1 against two kind of bottom tier playoff teams, and the Blackhawks aren't that. And so it's sort of this thing where I think there's a possibility where, you know, I'm not saying it's not going to be close. It's either going to go 6 or 7, but I think there could be a situation where the Ducks go into the first two games and maybe get their clocks cleaned, you know, just kind of not ready for this level of competition is basically what I'm saying.
That would be my concern too about the Ducks, is that, you know, that like Zach said, they're going to lose games in this series. I don't see how you can avoid it, because the Blackhawks are just too good. You're not going to sweep them. I guess it'll be on how they react if they do get their clocks cleaned. You know, that's going to be a big thing, but I agree that this is going to be a great series. I think it's one that we've wanted to see for a while. They finally get to meet up and settle this. But the best reason I can give you for picking the Blackhawks is just like what Mike said. It's just hard to pick against them until somebody beats them, you know? I'd like to see the Ducks pull it off, but I don't know if they will. We'll see.
Basically, American fans, most Canadian fans are good.
Oh, here we go.
Most Canadian fans
here
are good.
Here we go, Mike.
Let him talk.
Most Canadian fans are going to root for the last Canadian team in the playoffs. You don't have to like it. It would probably do you good to understand why it happens, but, you know, you don't have to if you don't want to. But it's going to happen. It's not your country, and they're not your teams. It doesn't bother you, so get over it.
I have a legitimate question about that, because I also root for the Canadian teams. I would love to see one of them make the final. It doesn't matter if it's the Calgary Flames, the Winnipeg Jets, the Habs, whoever. I don't understand what American fans don't get about this. It blows my mind. Like, A, why we give a shit, and B, why it bothers us. I just don't understand it.
This is the question, because it was brought up mostly on the boards because of our good pal Morgo switching teams.
Oh, Christ, I couldn't root for anybody he's rooting for, but still.
But what happened was, he's a Vancouver fan. And because Vancouver lost to Calgary, and he lives in Calgary, and they're a Canadian team, Morgo felt it upon himself as a civic duty to root for the Flames.
Okay.
So I understand that Canada's where the game's from and whatever, but like when like if the Ducks, Kings, and Sharks didn't win the Cup for another 20 years, are all the California fans going to lament, oh, we're in a California Cup drought, I'm going to root for the Kings
but
so they win a cup.
That's a false equivalency. That's not the same thing.
Exactly. California's not a country.
Right.
You can't. You can't. You were for like 2 months back.
Republic of California.
The California Republic still got the flag. It's striking. But it's a false equivalency because that lacks the national element, which is, you know, again, like it or not, that's why it exists in Canada. And if I recall correctly, weren't you pulling for the Coyotes back when you were living in Arizona? So, like, I don't see why Morgo living in Calgary makes it a –
because the Coyotes aren't the Ducks' blood rival.
They're a divisional rival, though.
Yeah, but I always seen the Coyotes as like, oh, that's cute.
That's fine, but let's say that like in 2 years
– cheap, and they played the Kings and – yeah.
But let's say that in 2 years, the Coyotes miraculously remain in Arizona somehow, become a dominant force in the Western Conference.
I wouldn't root for them.
Look, we've gone over this this phenomenon, I guess, on the show before, and I'm not really interested in explaining why it happens because I've done that before, and it's honestly not that hard to figure out. I'm just saying American fans – get over it because it literally doesn't affect you. They're not your teams in question. They're what fans in another country choose to do of their time. I don't understand why it pisses you guys off so much.
It's not that it pisses us off, but it's like we could never – in America, I guess we're more like split up when it comes to that sort of thing. Like I said, we would never root for a rival team just to get –
I don't agree with that. I think you see it happen more than you think.
Considering the fact that every single year since at least 2003, like clockwork, you always have some knuckle-dragging Yankee going on about how, 20-plus years of American Cup dominance, as if your team filled of Canadians somehow speaks to American hockey dominance, by the way. But when you say that, when I see that attitude on display from American fans, I find it hard to believe that those same knuckle-draggers aren't going to be going, go American team, if Canadian teams happen to win, say, the next 5 cups, you know, come year 6, if it's, say, hypothetically Habs Wild, I don't know, but, you know, I think you'd see a lot of American fans, even fans of teams that are, you know, rivals of the Wild, jump on that bandwagon. Maybe not everyone. Now, obviously, not everyone would, but I think a large portion of American hockey fans would, definitely. I mean, people say, oh, well, Americans wouldn't do that, but that's, one, you don't know for sure, and two, it's probably going to be a while before we even contest that, because there are 23 American teams and 7 Canadian teams, so the chances of an American Cup drought over an extended period of time, that's probably not going to happen, but I can say from behavior I've observed, yeah, if Canada won, say, 5 cups in a row, I could see American fans going whole hog on, you know, the next American team to make the finals. I don't buy that at all. And I just, again, I don't get why it bothers American fans. Because every time you see American fans go, it's so stupid. Well, you know, maybe it is to you. But how is it any of your business, to be perfectly honest?
I think, Mike, I think you're making a great point, but you're using the wrong sport to illustrate it. And I'll tell you why. You've got to put... to get the American perspective on it, you know, this is no knock on hockey, a game we all love, but to really give a better idea of, I think, how it would work here, we have to put it in the idea that let's say that there are 5 Canadian NFL teams. Let's say that the CFL and the NFL merge, okay? And the Stampeders and the Argos, and they run off a Super Bowl run of like 20 years. You know for a fact that when that happens, every single year, the United States is going to root for whoever it is from the U.S. that makes that Super Bowl. That's the comparison you need to make here to kind of really illustrate the point. In that perspective, it makes perfect sense to me.
And
I completely get why they root for the last Canadian team. I totally understand it because it's their sport, and they want to see one of their teams bring it home. It makes perfect sense.
It's a combination of the drought and those aforementioned Yankee knuckle-draggers who won't shut up about how the last team, you know, who won't shut up every time the last Canadian team is eliminated. You know, American fans... You know, you can't go on this whole, you guys haven't won a cup in 22 years and then not expect us to root for the last Canadian team every year if only in the vain hope that it'll shut you up. You know, that's how it works. Shut the fuck up about the drought if you want us to stop rooting for the last Canadian team hoping that they'll end the drought. I don't know. It just pisses me off because in a lot of ways this behavior on the part of Canadian fans is sort of fostered by a certain level of American arrogance. And two, even putting that aside, it's completely inconsequential to how American fans enjoy the game. It does not affect you at all. So why do you care?
Okay, I want to throw this in. All right.
That's all I'm asking. I just want to know, why do you guys care so much?
I agree. I that baffles me too. But here's, okay, I think that you got to put some perspective on it too in this respect. It's not like if the Habs had made the finals and won the cup, you were going to run out and decorate your house in Montreal Canadiens gear. Am I correct?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, hey, of the two choices, I would rather see the Canadian team win. Does that pretty much sum it up?
Yes.
It's not like you guys are going, hey, I was a Leafs fan. Now I'm going, you know, I'm going to go against my blood. I'm going to, you know, root for my blood rival, the Canadiens. No, it's not like that. It's just like, hey, we want to see the Canadian team win. Simple as that. That's the way I see it anyway. I might be wrong, but that's the way I look at it.
Well, after my quick perusal of the NHL rosters, by the way. If you Canadians are looking for a team to latch on to, the most Canadian team left is the Anaheim Ducks.
But that's my point. You know, if the Anaheim Ducks go and win the Stanley Cup and, you know, some idiot like the Six or J. Quincy King comes out and goes, fuck you, Canada. Well, okay, the Cup champions from Anaheim was a mostly Canadian team, so... Go Canada still, I guess. Like, I don't know. I don't get it. Like,
it's kind of like when the Jays won a couple of World Series, there were people that were like, okay, I guess their Dominicans are better than our Dominicans.
By the way, you realize why the Americans bring it up?
Like, why?
Because you guys get so mad that we get that we bring it up.
Yeah, you know?
Right?
I don't think so.
If Canadians were just like, whatever, you know. Doesn't matter to us,
mm-hmm.
then we wouldn't care either.
So you care.
Or some people wouldn't care.
I find that a flawed argument because you're basically saying, look at those people getting insulted, you know, when we insult their country. So
let's insult them some more.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
But you know, like if people had started doing it, like look at Canada and Canada was like, whatever you guys had, you know, the teams that played there were better. And then it's like, oh, well, yes, they were.
So it's our fault that we reacted to you guys taking the low road?
Welcome to America, Mike.
No, Mike. What I'm saying is if Canada didn't get all up in arms that we got, quote-unquote, up in arms, then it would go away.
I don't think that – see, but I don't view it as the Canadian people getting up in arms about it. I think they try to explain their position, and then you get – I don't know who it was on the boards, but there were just people that were saying shit. It was like,
One of the funniest was Lights Out, you know, saying, I don't get why Leafs fans would root for the Canadians. And I'm like, okay, first of all, Lights Out, learn how to actually be a LA Kings fan before you tell me how to be a Toronto Maple Leafs fan.
I like how you said, I know you're kind of new to this whole hockey thing, but that was really nice. Nice dismissive way to put it.
I mean, you know, in cases like that, just, you know, shut the fuck up and stop telling me how to be a fan. And that's a bigger problem. And it's not even confined by nationality. You know, this isn't even a national problem, but you
this
just have
is a problem that started coming up with the boards that I hate too, because it started with Headley on me too.
You just have some assholes who assume that how they choose to be a sports fan is how all people should be a sports fan, and then they go out of their way to insult people who don't conform to their own standards. You know, at the end of the day, sports is it's about fun. It's about having fun. So if you want to have fun by being, you know, pessimistic about your team, then fine. Nobody should be able to tell you not to be pessimistic.
Or if you want to be like me and have 27 favorite teams, more power to you.
Exactly.
Well, that's a problem, Greg.
Why?
We need to talk about this, Greg.
No, you
need to have a rooting interest.
I have lots of rooting interests.
Yes, most of the majors.
No, I don't have to have a quote-unquote favorite team or a rooting interest. I don't have to. Look, as you get older, you'll notice this. Sports are just television shows or events that
How
you go to.
How dare you? These are important.
They're like concerts or TV shows or whatever. At the end of the day, my biggest concern with sports is whether I'm entertained or not. That's it. You know, would I like to see the teams that I prefer win? Yeah. I mean, do I have favorite teams? Sure. But being a sort of Pirates fan doesn't stop me from rooting for the Mets in a situation or, well, I really don't like any of the other teams in the National League Central.
Yeah, fuck those scrub lords.
I can't remember who they all are. Well, there's
the Cardinals.
Cardinals. I don't dislike the Cardinals.
You have a Cardinals World Series ring.
Well, I don't care. The only one that I wouldn't wear would probably be a Red Sox World Series ring.
I'm convinced he just got that to troll the forums just in general. he could periodically post it and then just send everyone else into a blind rage. But, like, I don't know, stuff like this punchline has more cups than your pillar of Canadian society ever will. It's just like, how can you not expect people to then respond angrily at that?
I said that not as a shot against Canada, just as a shot against Morgo.
I get that. But at the same time, it's one of those things where, like, American fans say crap like that and then get surprised when Canadians respond by rooting for the last Canadian team because they know that if a Canadian team wins it, they'll shut up crap like that. So it's one of these cases where it's just like, don't be dicks about it and you won't see us trying to overcompensate for you guys acting like dicks.
I'm okay with certain Canadian teams eventually winning the Stanley Cup.
Like
not Vancouver. Ottawa. I don't think an Ottawa Stanley Cup would get anybody really excited.
I can tell you what would happen if they won the Cup. Mm. People would be like, oh, that's right. They have a team in Ottawa. I always feel kind of bad for them. They're kind of like the Texas Rangers of hockey.
Well,
you just don't think about them.
Well, they're in a city that was like split between Leafs and Habs fans for like decades, and then they plopped a new team there, and people were like, "Ah, oh, we're just going to keep being Leafs and Habs fans."
Yeah.
And then you get a few people who dress up like Spartacus and go to the games, and
you got to kind of like that, don't you?
I never liked the whole Roman theme for the Senators anyway. It's so convoluted.
I'd be okay with Winnipeg winning. I like Winnipeg. They're nice people. Calgary, yeah, they're fine. The Leafs, they could use it. And I think Montreal's a pretty nice place.
I honestly wouldn't have a problem with any Canadian team winning, even the ones that are rivals to the Leafs, because, again, my motivations at this point are to shut up the Americans who won't shut up about Canada, you know, having a cup drought. And at the end of the day, any of the seven Canadian teams winning it would shut them up. So there you have it. If you want to stop me from, you know, rooting for the last Canadian team, then Americans, shut up those among you who are nationalist, chauvinistic assholes.
I wouldn't call
not to
it
put
chauvinist.
Too fine a point on it.
we're not railing against the Canadian women. I like Canadian
national
women.
Chauvinism is a different thing entirely. It's not a sexual or gender thing. It's
I knew that.
Don't be smart with me, Mike.
I'm not shocked by this at all. I'm shocked about the way it happened, but I'm not shocked at all that it happened, and that's Bill Simmons leaving ESPN. Being fired, I guess.
Well, he's not being fired. They're just not renewing the contract.
Have we determined, is he going to ride out the rest of his contract? I mean, or is he just going to sit on the sidelines and collect his checks until it's done?
If I was him, I wouldn't. Why would you?
Why would you let him come back? I wouldn't.
No. Not why would ESPN let him come back? If you're Bill Simmons and your boss already said, yeah, we're firing you in 5 months, what incentive do you have to do anything? Or what? The other thing is because not everyone, I wouldn't say, because some people aren't as tuned into the sports media as we might be. But anyone, like a good majority of the people that read his site or listen to the podcast, they know what's happening.
Yeah.
So if he were to do anything, it's with that cloud over the head or the elephant in the room of this. So he can either address it on the next podcast and be like, look, the contract's being terminated, but between now and then, we're still going to do the best work we can, and that's that.
But right? If you're ESPN, even if he does that, do you roll the dice and go – well, I guess because they'd have editorial control over what he does, he really couldn't hurt him too bad. But I think ESPN made the first move so that it looked like they made the first move.
They don't want the narrative to be Bill Simmons wants nothing to do with us.
Right,
well,
exactly.
You know the thing that finally put them over the top to release the statement, right?
The thing he was exactly right about, yeah.
No, I missed that.
Okay, so what happened was like after the Deflategate ruling came down, Dan Patrick had him on his radio show. They were talking about how the report came out, but there wasn't suspensions immediately afterwards. Mm-hmm. The NFL was waiting on them as almost to like gauge the public response to it.
Which
right?
I think that's exactly what they were doing, but yeah.
Right.
I'm just going to say, honestly, given the NFL's past calendar year, probably isn't the worst idea.
It's the best idea, but in this situation, probably not the best look. But anyway, what he said was Roger Goodell doesn't have the testicular fortitude to make a decision.
That's also probably true.
That supposedly is what was the final straw for ESPN. Which, again, criticizing Roger Goodell is not something that anybody else at ESPN has done. Look at Keith Olbermann. Olbermann rode Goodell hard.
This is true, yeah.
I think even harder than anything Simmons did.
Yeah, but, no question.
But for this to be the final straw, I think is a little petty on ESPN's part. But I also think that if that's truly the thing that sent them over the edge, they were already not going to renew his contract anyway.
Right.
This just gave them a reason to say, okay, look, we're going to say it now.
It's just so obvious now that, you know, it's like, okay, if he had said something, if he had criticized, say, ESPN itself, then it's a case where it's like, okay, a company does have sort of the right to protect their own image and to make sure that their employees toe the line. Every company sort of has that right. But he didn't even go after ESPN. He went after the NFL. So I think it's we've all known it for years. We've all commented on it that ESPN is basically just a propaganda machine for the NFL. But this has got to confirm it, that someone was let go, not for anything they said that damaged ESPN's image or brand, but for, you know, attacking the NFL's image.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what happened. But like Zach pointed out, I mean, is it just the way Olbermann does it better or with less? I don't know. He doesn't like drop in testicular fortitude. I dare you. And he's a liar type. Olbermann is very critical, but he's not as incendiary about it with his criticism.
Maybe there were plenty of times where he basically called Roger Goodell a liar.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if saying the actual word is a bad thing for ESPN, but Olbermann went up to that line and crossed it several times in his criticism of Goodell, asking for him to be fired just basically every single day.
Yep.
Tom was saying this person should be fired every day for like 2 months, any worse than calling someone a liar one time.
I think it's just in the presentation.
I think it's the brand, because Keith Olbermann, you know, between his two stints at ESPN, had that political commentary career where he was basically the left-wing Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of established Keith Olbermann in the minds of a lot of people as someone who's not afraid to take a moral stand against authority figures. I will say Olbermann's past at MSNBC created an idea in people's minds that, oh, this is kind of Keith Olbermann's shtick, whereas Bill Simmons didn't necessarily have that going for him.
Side by side, they both essentially said the same thing, Olbermann and Bill Simmons. I think a lot of this has to do more with stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we don't see between Simmons and ESPN than it really has anything to do with what he said. I think they just needed an excuse. I think the difference, too, might be that when Olbermann does it, he's not directly challenging ESPN. He's not saying, I'm going to say this, screw you if you don't like it, fire me, I dare you.
Is it just because Simmons did it on Dan Patrick's radio show?
That might also be it.
As opposed to, like, Colin Coward?
That also might be it. I get the sense that ESPN isn't too terribly thrilled at the fact that Dan Patrick had a career outside of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of like a running joke on the Dan Patrick show that ESPN people are technically not supposed to appear on his show.
But
ESPN
there's been like a lot more of them recently.
Yeah, I think that's because ESPN kind of went, hey, you know what? If we don't start letting people go on, it's going to look like this is true, which it probably was, but I don't know. I mean, ESPN at some point in the proceedings, they have to say, you know what, we're a whole lot more about the entertainment part of ESPN than we are about anything that we claim to be journalists about. Because
that's been obvious for years.
Yeah, I know, but they've really got to just kind of drop the pretense at this point, because let's
Skip
be honest
Bayless's
about it.
Career is a monument to that.
I'm interested to see where he's going to go. I think he branches out on his own at this point.
He doesn't need ESPN. It's obvious.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need ESPN. He can go anywhere. He can branch out on his own. He can go anywhere. There are any number of publications or networks who would love to have him.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Where does he go next?
I think he does his own thing.
I'm starting to lean that way, too, because when it comes to the people out there that he could work for, there's Fox, which is in L.A., but I don't think – Fox doesn't have the internet presence that some other places do. Because that's what Simmons does. He does online columns and podcasts.
Right.
Yeah, there's all the other stuff, and maybe he could get like a TV show out of Fox too, because God knows they could use some quality programming. Despite Simmons' kind of, you know, fun, like outlandish sort of personality, I don't think he meshes with Fox. NBC and CBS, I don't think work either.
The thing I was thinking was Turner, actually, TNT, right. Because of the basketball coverage.
Right, because he said a long time ago that he wants to be where the basketball coverage is, and that's with Turner. And Turner has the Bleacher Report, which is actually starting to catch up to ESPN in terms of online reading.
And it's not the clusterfuck it used to be, is it? I mean, they've actually got pros on there now.
It's not where like any schmuck could just be like, here's what I think about sports.
You can still do that, but they have hired legitimate writers. Mm-hmm. And they're doing actual journalism and coverage instead of just slideshows of the SEC's hottest cheerleaders, which I'm sure they did every day for about 13 months.
Oh, I saw so many slideshows on that stupid thing. It would be like – I would see – like you do a Google search and you would see like, you know, best uniforms, this or that. And you go, oh, that looks interesting. And you click and you go, oh, it's a Bleacher Report. Never mind.
Right.
You know?
But they're actually half decent now. I've gone there and tried to read some stuff, and they have some good things, but I'm still kind of overcoming the – but it's the Bleacher Report.
They have a real stigma they've got to get rid of because right. to legitimate sports fans, serious sports fans, they've been a joke for a long time.
Right, but between like hiring people and Turner's backing, they've actually improved in quality.
I mean, we saw what Simmons was able to do with Grantland, right?
Right.
So, maybe, you know, hypothetically, Turner pays him a lot of money. They put him on their basketball on their NBA coverage. And then they also say, also, we're going to give Bleacher Report to you.
I don't know if he would get Bleacher Report proper, but I think that they would give him in the same way that Grantland was its own thing, but under the ESPN website umbrella. I would see Simmons making his own site. But it just being like a slice of the Bleacher Report, you know?
Right. Yeah. See, I think it's going to be a combination. It's going to be – he's going to do his own site, but he's going to hook on with TNT and Turner as – the only way I can describe it is like a part-time basketball analyst.
Right, because the other problem with Turner is that they're in Atlanta.
Yeah.
The TV studios are.
If I were Turner, I'd call Ted up, right, and I'd be like, Ted, write a giant-ass check. Whatever it takes.
Can we change his name to Channel 13?
Channel 13 Simmons.
You guys know he actually did that, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Andy Messerschmidt was Channel 17. That was his nickname, supposedly.
But I think what you're saying is probably more what he's going to do. Because with Simmons' cachet now and his ability to kind of bring people together to make things and the amount of people – in high level friends that he has now with money and his own money that I'm sure he has plenty of.
Were you shocked as I was that he makes $5 million a year?
No.
Given how many people listen to his show, how much traffic he generates, not at all.
And then add on the 30 for 30 stuff and not just being like, and not just writing for Grantland, but he's the editor of Grantland.
Right.
He's like the grand poobah of it. It didn't surprise me. And he still did some TV stuff, and I'm sure some of that money was a holdover, and he wasn't going to just let that
I know, but it's just that the ESPN, you know, the big names on the TV side of it make pretty good money, but, you know, I just thought he was somewhere in the, you know, the mid six figures. I never thought it was over $1 million, and when I saw five, I was like, well, good for you. He's been making that for at least what? How long was this last contract for? 5 years?
Yeah.
So he's banked $25 million in the last 5 years. So right, he's not in a position where he has to desperately run out and grab the next thing that comes down the road. He's in a really good negotiating position right now.
But knowing how Simmons works, I don't think he's just going to sit around and sit on his money for any extended period of time.
No.
He wants to get out there. He wants to be creating stuff and creating content.
He's got quite the resume at ESPN. I mean, you know, we think about his column and the mailbags and all that, but really the 30 for 30, that was some really inspired programming.
And that's what I want to ask. What happens? I mean, obviously they're going to keep 30 for 30 at ESPN, but quality-wise, what happens?
Well, the thing with 30 for 30s is that to have them made, they weren't necessarily coming out of ESPN internally. They were outside documentary directors. that would come to Simmons or any of the other producers with an idea.
Right.
And they would say, okay, yeah, you can make a 30 for 30 about this. So they're going to keep the brand and everybody else in place, as far as I know. It'll still probably be the same process where it's an outside independent director comes to them with an idea, they green light it, and then they make it. So I don't think the quality of 30 for 30 will go down. I'm more interested in what happens to Grantland because he created that whole thing, and a lot of the people that work there came there because of Simmons and his recruiting. I think when people have the chance, if Simmons creates another thing that's similar to Grantland, I have no doubt that a lot of people that are at Grantland right now, Simmons could pull when their contracts are up.
Do you think Bill Barnwell would follow him right out the door if he could?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and who's the other – a couple of – what's his name?
Zach Lowe.
Zach Lowe. Who's the other guy? The Chuck Klosterman?
Yeah.
Well, he's not – I don't know if he's like a full-time employee of Grantland, but those
– I think he's like a freelancer.
But those are guys that they would gladly go to wherever Simmons goes next. I think Grantland will suffer greatly from this. I just don't see ESPN – because, you know, you look at it, it was kind of a vanity project for Simmons anyway. Not a vanity project, but, you know, kind of a bone they threw him. Here, you can do this.
And I think it's become a lot more successful than even ESPN could have anticipated it being.
Yeah. A lot of people don't like Simmons. A lot of people love him. I'm in both camps. There are days where I'm like, I can't stand this guy. Yeah. There are other days where I go, this is the greatest thing ever. And to me, that shows you what's so good about him.
When he goes to talk about basketball, like, I can't get as in-depth with basketball as he does.
Yeah.
And so it turns me off, and I just don't listen to it that day or whatever. I don't read it that day. And that's fine. But I still think that when he does a pretty damn good job at it. It's just not for me. And there are some times where it's like some of these ridiculous theories or the things he gets into.
I love it when he waxes poetic about New England sports. It's amazing.
Right. But it's I don't know. He has his ups and downs. He rubs some people the wrong way. But one way or the other, people have an opinion about him, right?
Right, exactly.
And he generates a reaction from people. And that's the most important thing, whether it's good or bad.
I love some of his theories. I think it was funny. Somebody brought up, well, we'll get to see if the Ewing theory plays out with Grantland now. I thought it was pretty funny.
True, huh?
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he falls.
Turner just makes the most sense the more that you think about it. Like the only stumbling block is Atlanta, and he might not want to go down there. But even then, for enough money,
he could fly out there like once a month, and then during the playoffs, be there every other day.
I'm sure that Ted would gladly fly him in for whatever he needs to do. It'll be curious to see where he goes. I'm not at all surprised that he's leaving. I'm really not. I shouldn't even say I'm that surprised that ESPN pulled the trigger first because they wanted to be able to control the story, and now they can.
This was inevitable, I think, ever since, December when he was first suspended. But just given his personality, the idea that he'd go back to work and be like, I'm going to be a company man now, just never seemed – that wasn't going to be anything that was going to happen.
No.
No.
This week on Basically Three Drunk Guys Talking Baseball.
I saw a Cardinals fan actually hearing Hitchner.
Oh.
And
is he the best baseball fan in all of Kitchener?
I
assume he was, but the thing that made me crack up, the thing that's made me, you know, bring this up now is the fact that, okay, he was wearing one of the batting practice jerseys, the red jersey with the navy blue side panels. The thing that was notable was that he had it tucked into jean shorts.
Are you dead? You are not serious.
I am serious. 100%
no,
serious.
You're making that up. Come
no,
on.
I am not. No, I am not. A Cardinals fan was wearing a batting practice jersey tucked into his jean shorts.
Oh, God.
It's a cultural thing. It's not even a Missouri thing. It's just this is what you do when you become a Cardinals fan.
Basically, three drunk guys talking baseball.
Another good reason to watch Channel 11.
Ladies and gentlemen, Zach's Tabs.
Zach's Tabs!
Well done.
Understated,
entry, yes.
But good. We'll start in the realms of Twitter and hockey.
Oh, Twitter, where nothing ever goes wrong.
Well, today something went very much right. The Discovery Channel put out an interesting fact saying, on average, emperor penguins grow to about 3.8 feet tall.
You know what? That's the kind of stuff that the Discovery Channel Twitter should be used for.
And, yes. Yeah, who doesn't need a good penguin fact? I mean, come on, penguins are just an absolutely hysterical animal. Come on.
So the Pittsburgh Penguins responded at Discovery Channel. As of May 13th, 2015, the average Pittsburgh penguin grows to be about 6'1". The Discovery Channel responded, saying at Penguins, strange. Our latest observations show no penguin activity currently on the ice in Pittsburgh. Where did they go? When Discovery. You get burned by the Discovery Channel, your day is over.
Yep.
Bravo, Discovery Channel.
Nice job, yeah.
The Pittsburgh Penguins should probably just shut up for the rest of the offseason.
You lose. Just let that one go by and forget they even said it because you're not going to come back.
Points. You lose.
Yep. That was a walk-off home run by the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. We'll go to your neck of the woods, Greg. Ohio.
This ought to be good.
Do you know where Franklin High School is, Greg?
What town is it in?
Franklin, Ohio.
No, I do not.
Well, they had an interesting predicament on their baseball field.
Oh, I thought it was going to be another chlamydia story. Okay.
No. The Franklin baseball team was scheduled to play a doubleheader. The parks and recreations people came to, you know, make sure the field was good. And they came up with a little issue. There was something in between the pitching mound and home plate.
Uh-oh.
That would pose quite the problem to throw a baseball through. Someone planted a tree halfway in between the pitcher's mound and home plate.
That shit ain't funny, motherfucker.
How'd that happen?
Someone got onto the field overnight and planted a tree.
Nice. Yes.
Why? I don't know.
You don't see this kind of stuff happen enough in baseball, really. I think they should leave it there.
It'd be an interesting home field advantage. I mean,
right.
You have the hill in Houston. I went to a high school game the other day where all of left field was on a hill. But a tree in between the pitcher's mound and home plate is certainly a new...
I like it. I think it looks cool. I say leave it there.
One of baseball's charms is that each field is unique.
Right.
And each field has its own unique little aspects to it. So this is right up, you know, I say keep the tree.
Right. This is baseball at its purest right here.
Exactly.
The little quirks in each park. I think you got to leave it there. All right. What's next?
Well, we'll go in two areas of Mike's interests. The CFL.
Oh, right. And that's one of my interests, too, by the way.
The Holocaust, oh God.
There's a defensive lineman for the Montreal Alouettes,
oh God.
Liv Mitchell. Over the last week, he's gotten to the interesting parts of YouTube. First, he posted a video link with the hashtags WW2 Flyover, WW2, WW3, with the video The Greatest Lie Ever Told, The Holocaust.
Oh, God.
You can't do nothing else.
Then he tweeted out, whoever said the truth doesn't set you/me/all free, those who lie. And then posted a video about how ISIS is fake. Somebody asked him, like, I guess your account was hacked, right? And he said, no, it wasn't. I was simply searching to prove the facts that Nazis and some Jews were together. Someone asked you, so you deny the Holocaust? No, I don't deny it. I just simply think we should all be looking deeper.
Before we even go any further into this, I just want to point out that I'm happy to see that the United States doesn't have the market cornered on dumb football players.
No, it's pretty, it's a universal commodity.
Apparently,
really.
Yeah. So what does he think is behind the Holocaust? And is he trying to say that it's some sort of conspiracy? That
Well, I'm not taking the time to watch the videos because...
Yeah.
Probably, if I had to guess, the way these things generally go, the Holocaust was probably a conspiracy orchestrated by reptilian space Jews. That tends to be how these things go.
Well, that's got to be the greatest thing ever, reptilian space Jew. I like that.
I once stumbled across a conspiracy website that claimed that the Vatican, the British monarchy, and Washington, D.C. were all under the control of the Jewish space alien Illuminati.
Well, so I guess we can say then that Judaism is universal then, basically, right?
No, we're all aliens is the thing.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
We're all aliens. We have a giant Star of David-shaped space station in orbit around the Earth. It's called the Jew Star is what it is. And we are secretly controlling the world from it.
Oh, well, at least you're admitting it. That's nice. Now we know who's in charge of everything, so that makes things a little easier.
I am the secretary to the governing council of space Zionists.
Okay.
So I don't actually have any power, but I do keep the notes on the meetings.
All right. I didn't know you were that important, Mike. I'm impressed. That's very cool.
Well, it's a middle management position, really. So, you know.
You learn something every day. Okay.
So you guys know the stupid news trend of guys running up behind somebody, a reporter, doing a live thing, saying, you know, effer right in the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this happened, in Mike's neck of the woods at a Toronto FC game.
I heard about this. Wilfrid Laurier University, one of the two universities actually in my hometown, actually had a comment on this.
Oh. Well, in the video, she's just interviewing some fans, and then some dude comes up and just kind of says it right into the microphone. So she breaks away from the interview with the people and said, you know, why do you do this? And these drunk bros are just like, because it's hilarious, man. But then she's like, but it's not funny. It's never been funny. It's not funny now. All it does is screw people up like me trying to do my job. It's demeaning to women. Things of all that nature.
Yeah.
And eventually, one of the guys was found out, and he made a six-figure salary. And I said made because he's been fired.
Good.
He's been fired. And the reason why Laurier had to comment on this is because that particular individual was an alumni of Wilfrid Laurier University. So they kind of had to go out and say, this one's not on us. He was an idiot.
some of the people that run around, like I saw one this morning, as a matter of fact. It was a girl in a ballet dress with a horse head running around behind the reporter. I found that hysterical. But to run up and say something that's just really kind of vulgar into the mic like that, that's not funny. The horse head dancing around behind him, that's funny. That's good stuff.
If you're going to do it, be funny about it.
Right, exactly. You people with the horse heads, keep up the fine work. It's good stuff. Is that it?
That, I believe, is it.
All righty. Well, with that, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports, where occasionally one of us hops on the Periscope thing and looks like a complete fool. You can also... Okay, I look like a complete fool. All right, anyway, go to the website, basicallysportsshow.com. You can check out all the old episodes there. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and the YouTubes. And with that, I am done speaking.
See ya.
Okay, well... Greg's done speaking, but Mike, you and I can keep going. also, welcome back, Manitoba Moose.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
The Moose.
That's particularly interesting because from the sportslogos.net forum, that was from our very own Sterling.
Yes.
Before we end the show really quick, when we were doing the Periscope thing today, there's a gentleman named Kyle Moore that listens to us, who I assume was just somebody from the boards, but it turns out he just stumbled onto Basically a Sports Show a couple years back, and he says, in his own words, I've been hooked ever since. So I thought we'd throw a little special shout out to Kyle there because that was awfully nice of him, I thought. Yeah.
And he's from Manitoba, too.
And he's from Manitoba, right.
He's probably going to go to a ton of Moose games.
And he works. He's a newsman for the radio station in Manitoba. So there you have it.
Oh, yeah. All the news. Like, hey, there was a dead moose out on Highway 12 and maple syrup spill on Main Street there. So... hope that doesn't affect your commute at all.
All right. We are done. We will see you next week on Basically a Sports Show.
See you.
Later, hosers.
Sometimes I wonder just what am I fighting for? I win some battles, but I always lose the war. I keep right on stumbling, and there's no man's land out here. But I know, yes, I know, there must be a better world somewhere. Flying high, some joker clips my wings just because he gets a kick out of doing those kind of things. I keep on falling in space or just hanging in midair, but I know. There's just gotta be a better world somewhere. Every woman I want only wants herself. Everybody I love seems to love somebody else. Got a license to break my heart, and every love affair is over before it gets a chance to start. Oh! If it ain't here, maybe in the hereafter, instead of tears, I'll learn all about laughter. But meanwhile, I'm stuck out here. It just ain't fair, but I know. I said I know.